Okay, thank you, Pierre. So it's been very enjoyable time here, a lot of flourishing ideas. I would like here today to present, as I was stressed several times, in a very pedagogical way, a series of results away from criticality, because I think that might be a step forward in the field, at least put some challenge of it. So as I said, I will be extremely pedagogical, sometimes even embarrassing pedagogical for some of the experts in the audience, but I mean, I try my best. So first of all, I will discuss why it's important somehow to get information on system away from criticality. Then I will point out a particular quantity, which are the universal ratios and why they are important in identifying different universality classes. Then I will pass through the discussion of integrable model and massive excitation and how to solve exactly away from criticality, and this pass through the bootstrap program of S-matrix, form factor, correlation function, and so forth. Then I will discuss the more interesting case of non-integrable models, how one can get information about that. In particular, then I will address in full detail the easing field theory, just as an example, but this is quite interesting in itself, where we will see that there are phenomena like confinement, particle decay, vacuum decay, and so on and so forth. Okay, so it's a long story. So any statistical models like easing, for instance, as we know, has two scales. So the lattice one, but then there is the dynamical correlation length, which obviously depends on temperature and other quantities. Now, why field theory? Well, we have to compute partition function. First of all, we formulate in terms of some quantum operator, transfer matrix. This transfer matrix obviously apply on the different degrees of freedom of the system. And then field theory comes about, first of all, using universality, and second, in a particular region where the correlation length is much larger than the lattice space. Because at that point, we can forget about all the minute detail of the system, and we arrive to some smooth configuration for a field with some Boltzmann weight with some action. I will specify in a minute how to construct the action, how to work with that. Anyway, at this point, we have two formalism, either just path integral, so a sum on classical configuration, so this is the Euclidean field theory, but if you want, once you have the Euclidean field theory, just making more sense of the transfer matrix and its eigenvector, we can talk about particle excitation or really the state which diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, and as any field theory in the Minkowski, they are just particle dispersion relation relativistic and all kind of feature that we know from ordinary field theory from elementary particle. Now, obviously, if you want to discuss more sophisticated situation like boundary condition, well, this will be just in term of the quantum operator, nothing else than matrix element between particular states, which will be the boundary states. And if you want to do so in the path integral formulation, well, we have to restrict the sum on field which satisfy the boundary condition.
I have a question. What do you mean when you say dispersion
I will discuss more in detail later. However, I want to say, if you give me a field theory in the Euclidean, so just making a weak rotation, you can go to the Minkowski space. In Minkowski space, you can quantize ordinary, like canonical quantization relation, and the canonical quantization relation provide typically excitation, which you interpret as particle. Okay? So here is the interplay. So From statistical point of view, it's much more natural to some smooth configuration appealing to universality. But once you have your action, you might, I mean, without losing on generality, going to Minkowski, and in Minkowski you have a different interpretation. Okay, so I was telling you the action. What about the action? Well, the action nearby the fixed point can be written simply as a relevant deformation of the conformal field theory. So you give me a conformal field theory, I know the operator content, I can spot the relevant fields, I use the relevant fields to go to perturb my action. So this has two comments on that. First of all, this expression is completely meaningful because if the field especially strong relevant, the perturbation theory that you can construct for it is completely finite, or can be make it finite, and you can compute all in perturbation theory since you know all correlation functions on the conformal fields. These at least provide a definition of the theory perturbatively, but as we will see, there are a lot of non-perturbative phenomena which come out of it. Second comment is that since this field is relevant, it has with itself a mass scale which is just the dimensionful is the dimensionful coupling constant. So obviously when you couple the conformal field theory to a relevant operator, in particular you introduce a mass scale of the system that might be a true mass scale, so massive excitation, or just a mass scale which rule what? Rule the renormalization group flows. So once you couple the system to these fields, there is the interesting situation that the theory flows somewhere. So you might start from a fixed point in the ultraviolet, coupled to relevant fields. This flow in the infrared might be to another fixed point, or might be, say, at infinity, which means the theory is massive. So obviously, the network of renormalization group flow is a very interesting problem that has been exploited in a certain detail in the past. I will not go into detail because it's too much rich to make here justice of it. I will concentrate on a specific point. I will concentrate on the point that off-critical system can help in a more concrete problem. Which problem? Well, suppose I'm nearby a fixed point, easing, for instance. I have all the anomalous behavior of a response function like heat susceptibility, magnetization, magnetic susceptibility, and so on and so forth. So all of this quantity has a critical behavior, anomalous behavior with respect to the parameters. And then there are some numbers in front of it. Now, critical exponents, as we know, are pure number and universal quantity that people have focused a lot to compute that. The amplitude, the number in front, on the other end, are completely non-universal quantities, which depend on which representative you want to study for the class of universality under investigation. To be concrete, easing on a triangular lattice will have amplitude AB, gamma, and so on and so forth, different from easing on a square lattice, for instance, although the exponents are the same. Now, people have focused a lot on a critical exponent for obvious reasons. However, from an experimental point of view, probably they are the bad quantity to look at. So suppose you are an experimentalist and someone give you a sample and say, can you tell me which class of universality is this? Is easing, pre-critical easing, multi-critical easing? Now, from this point of view, as I say, the critical exponents are bad experimental fingerprint. Why? First of all, because usually are very small numbers, but this is not the problem. The problem is that they change very little, changing universality class. So from varying one universality to the other, you will have very, very little percentual variation. On top of that, to measure the critical exponents, what you have to do typically is plot on logarithmic scale and spot the straight. As I said, since there are experimental errors, well, you might have several straight lines which pass through, so this gives bad, in principle, bad obviously if the experimental is very, very good, the precision improves. So, what about the amplitude? As I say, the amplitude are sample dependent, however, some combinations are pure universal number. So some example, and I will be more detailed later on how to derive the most general expression of it. If you take ratio of susceptibility above and below critical temperature, this is a pure number. The same for correlation length, but then there are more sophisticated objects. Another example which might be important for the people here interested in geometrical object, suppose you have a self-avoiding walk, you can construct, say, the radius of duration for open or closed loop. Now, this scale anomalously with the number of n is the monomer along the chain, the critical exponents determined by the universality class 3/4, say in two dimensions. Now, the number C and D, as I said, depend on the underlying lattice. However, C over D is a pure universal number, which might be interesting to compute. So, how to derive the most general expression of it? Well, one has to rely on the scaling form of the free energy nearby the critical point. So as you know, the singular part of the free energy can be written apart, say a prefactor that is up to you how to choose it, in terms of a function which is a scaling function of the other variable.
Yeah. Before,
but,
I mean, so if this number at some kind of a saddle point?
Yeah, I will let me go and I will be more precise on that. So, I mean, this is the scaling form, so you have the what is called crossing exponents, and then appear some numbers, k, which are nothing else than the value of the coupling at some specific point. Now, there are many ways of understanding this. Imagine that the free energy satisfies a renormalization group equation, but then to solve it, you have to specify the initial condition. So there are metric parameters in it, which are completely non-universal, although the function itself is universal. So once you have this, this is enough to spot the dependence of all the amplitude I was talking about. So if you take, say, expectation value of some field, which is the derivative of the free energy, this will have the anomalous part with coefficient just coming from making derivative, which contain all the non-universal part I was talking about. Same for susceptibility, so you can trace out all the k, same for correlation length, and so on and so forth. So once you have that, it's just a question of, to consider a combination of this amplitude where all the metric k cancel. Okay, so you can, people have considered many in literature, there are really different definitions, many of them. So, for instance, if you take this particular ratio, all the k cancel, remain pure number, and so on and so forth. So, main advantages of that, first of all, are pure numbers. So it doesn't depend at all which sample you are considering for universality class. But what is most important is they present significant variation between different class of universality. So just to make an example, if I take the Ising model and the critical Ising model, which is the next to it, And I take ratio of the susceptibility. For easing is 37 something, for tricritical is 3. For correlation length, for easing is the ratio is 2, but for tricritical is twice cosine pi over 18, which you see is quite almost twice. So for their determination, on top of that, one or few measures are needed. So you just put, say, above and below critical temperature, make the ratio, and this, obviously, you can make mistake, but mistake which cannot be 10 times larger than the other. So say with a very easy measurement of susceptibility amplitude, you would be able immediately to say if your system, which is say Z2 symmetric, is in the class of universality of easing or the tricritical easing. So excuse me, can you repeat the question?
So but these numbers must depend on, let's say, on the distance to the critical point.
Yeah. In all my consideration is hidden somehow the assumption that I'm in the scaling region. Scaling region means that I'm really in the linearity region around the fixed point. Obviously, I mean, if you go away, there are bending or trajectory, all kind of mess. True. Okay, for all this topic, there is a review by Priedman and Domben-Green where everything is explained probably better than what I'm doing here. So, summarizing, if I want to compute universal quantity, you can choose whatever representative you want for the class of universality, because at the end of the day, everything will be the same. So why not field theory? This is one of the possible realization of the class of universality, but this has certain advantages in computing that. So the logic is, as far as you don't care in determining, say, non-universal quantity like critical temperature, this depends on the material, but if you are interested in universal quantity, you can use whatever representative you want, in particular field theory. So why is important this? Well, okay, once you, say, normalize properly the order parameters, this is a choice, of course. You see, all susceptibility are nothing else than integral or correlation function of the order parameters within the direction k. So by this notation I mean I'm deforming the theory with relevant operator k. So I'm going out, say, easing in magnetic field. Then I want to determine susceptibility of two fields. I have to compute the correlation function, but in the off-critical theory defined by this perturbation. Now, another advantage of field theory, at least a free benefit, is that once you tell me which operator you are perturbing, display immediately the role of the trace of stress energy tensor. And as we know, the stress energy tensor is a very important peculiar object in the theory. So in particular, satisfy a very nice sum rule. If I take, say, the second moment of the stress energy tensor, this has to end up to central charge. So this gives immediately a way of checking that you are doing correctly. So you compute the stress, so easing in a magnetic field. The magnetic field will be promoted to stress energy tensor. I will compute with certain technique. I will tell you later on this correlator, but to be sure that I'm doing right, if I compute this object, at the end of the day, I have to find 1/2, because this is the central charge of easing. The second rule is also very interesting and useful, because if you compute the two-point correlation function of the trace with any fields, well, this that you see is a susceptibility. If theta, I take the magnetic field, apart trivial prefactor, which you see is just a coupling constant, anomalous dimension, but this is rather trivial. A part of this, this is a susceptibility, but this susceptibility is nothing else than the measure of the anomalous dimension. So once again, this is very, very useful because, say, many susceptibility, alias integral correlation function, is not even is meaningless to compute because I know already the result. And this is very, very powerful without doing any job. So this clarifies a little bit the scheme. Now let me enter in a little discussion what I should expect away from criticality. So away from criticality, so you add field, imagine you have a Landau-Ginzburg potential, you might end up in crazy potential outside. So with a landscape, a vacua, and so on and so forth. So to determine the dynamics of the theory in such context is highly non-trivial job. So let me focus just for the sake of my consideration. Suppose my off-critical theory is like that. What are the excitations? It's an example. Well, in this example, the excitation, as you see, are just kinks and anti-kinks. So it means that the theory has several vacua, and there are non-perturbative configuration which interpolate between the two. So asymptotically stay in one vacuum, but on the other infinity is on the next neighborhood vacuum. Obviously you can have the inverse anti-kink, and then you can have multi-kink of it. In particular, you might have two particle kinks. So this two particle kink anti-kink is the one that eventually provide bound state around one of these vacua. So obviously you can explore different vacua, and then, as I said, you can imagine all possible composition of this kink. Now I introduce a parameter, the rapidity, which is better to define. So what is the rapidity? Well, the rapidity come about because these excitations satisfy relativistic dispersion relation. So they are on shell. So from this point of view, much better to use hyperbolic function and introduce this parameter theta, the rapidity, which geometrically is nothing else than the area which is behind the hyperbole and the point which is identified with EMP. So for small value of the rapidity, you see the rapidity is essentially the momentum. Probably I didn't say at the beginning, I'm considering really the simplest setting where I deform my theory with scalar operator, so no spin. The theory will be isotropic, and then in this sense you will have fully translation invariance, relativistic invariance, blah, blah, blah. Obviously you can complicate the life as much as you want, but okay, so let me stop a minute to make a summary so far. So at criticality, how you would describe the system? Well, in terms of excitations, which are nothing else than conformal states. By away from criticality, the excitations are particles, which can be massive or massless. Massive is the generic situation. You switch on a perturbation that the theory developed just a mass scale. However, interesting case which I do not have time to analyze here, where particle can be massless. This happens where your normalization group flow start from one and end to the others. Why massless? Because in that case, the effective field theory you will build on will be on the low energy degrees of freedom living on the infrared point. So to make a very simple example, in the flow from critical easing to easing that exist, the ending excitation are the free massless fermions. So you will construct in that case the theory in terms of massless particle, the Majorana fermion on the easing, and then multi-states thereof. Symmetry, what about symmetry? Well, at the conformal point, we know that at least there are Virasoro algebra, there might be extended algebra and so on. Away from criticality, typically nothing is left, typically. Or there might exist, as I will discuss later, symmetry we just commute. So you do not have a kind of a spectrum constructing, operator constructing spectrum. Now, what about the operators? Well, at the criticality, the operators are in correspondence one-to-one with the states. So this is very useful relation. Whereas, away from criticality, the story changes completely, because to specify the operator, you have to give the matrix element on the states. So each operator will be defined by its matrix element on the states. The classification of it make the story quite different, because at criticality the classification is just the irreducible representation of Virasoro. So you classify the Virasoro representation, you have your class of universality. Away from criticality the story is really different, because as we will see, this matrix element defines certain equations, particular linear equations. And the classification of the operator are all the possible different solutions of the same equation. So you have a certain number of equations, you find a different solution, and then you assign to each of these solutions one operator. It's highly non-trivial game. And this end up also in another consequences that at the criticality the correlators satisfy linear differential equations, whereas away from criticality, first of all, is not known in general, but the case which has worked out, like easing for instance, there are differential equations of quite transcendental order, like Pan-Levé for instance, just to make an example. Okay, so this is all we expect. So we have to imagine our system composed of quasi-particle excitation. This is the way to approach in the system. And this quasi-particle excitation can make scattering. Now this is where the story somehow branches. Because away from criticality, so this particle can make scattering, but depending on the dynamics, you can have two situations. Either you have conservation law such that all the process, the scattering process, are elastic, no matter how much energy you give to it, or if you are in the most common situation, you do not have conservation law, and therefore, as much as you provide energy to the particle, they will produce others, simply because you have a relativistic theory. So the story becomes completely different in the two cases, at least mathematically speaking, because this case is really rather complicated, I will discuss later on. So to be logically or pedagogically consistent, I have first to discuss in detail the elastic case, how you can make progress of it, and then once all this case is understood, then you might ask the question how to approach the most general case where your particle make a lot of production and you can have a quite remarkable phenomena. So I will discuss for the rest, for the next transparencies this one, and then I will come back to the end to this point. Now, integrable dynamics away from criticality. So this beautiful subject has been pushed in particular by Sasha Zamolodzhikov. And the story goes like that. So you have a particle, say, with index I and J, just to classify them. The rapidity I introduced before, what it is. You make scattering, and they just shuffle their internal index, but no production, and all the momenta are conserved. So this process can be described in terms of functions, which are called the S matrix, which has some basic property. First of all, if you look this function from this point of view, well, this is in elementary particle what is called S-channel. S stands for the Mandelstam variable S, which is the square of the energy in the center of mass. On the other hand, the same amplitude can give you information on the T-channel. So this is a remarkable thing, that from a relativistic field theory, the same object capture simultaneously the dynamics which happen in the S-channel on the T-channel. T-channel means that if you just change your head, turn your head, and you look the process in this other direction, so scattering I with particle m, well, this process will be described by an analytic continuation dysfunction, simply like that. Okay? Yeah. The crossing symmetry is true. Obviously, when you have non-integrability, you might have here as outcoming process a lot of particles. But the crossing symmetry is a basic symmetry of field theory, which is simply nothing else than a change of variable in the path in the LSG reduction on the field. Obviously, you have to restrict to say to the elastic part 2 in 2. Even though the real amplitude, if you give enough energy, can be 2 in 22. Okay? Yeah. So, this is better, thank you. So, I denote from now on AI, the operator, which somehow create is associated to the particle of rapidity beta I, okay? So you can see this relation from many point of view. Mathematically, you can see as just a commutator, the braiding, if you want, but I mean, from old-fashioned field theory, just the scattering amplitude that you might compute by ordinary Feynman. Now, in integrable model, we have the Young-Baxter equation. We'll not spend time of it. Let me focus more on an important story, on the analytic property of this function. So, this function satisfies unitarity. So, this is an S matrix. S matrix means if you do the process, do the inverse, you have done nothing, one. And crossing relation the way I said before. Now, this S matrix, the elastic S matrix, is the simplest possible analytic structure you can imagine. Because we live in the complex plane of the variable S, simply two branch cuts. This is the S branch cut. This branch cut is very easy to understand. The energy is quadratic expression of the moment, if you want. So if you express the moment in terms of the energy, we'll have a square root. And so this is typically, in the simplest situation, it's just a double sheets of the Riemann surface, square root, okay? So there is a trick to open this branch cut. So you have this branch cut, you can open like this. And the trick is to use a conformal map in terms of the rapidity difference. So if you use this map, you will map this plane into this other plane, and the possible pole, which stays in this interval, which are bound states, are mapped here. So let's see what's going on in terms of unitarity. So unitarity is the discontinuity along this branch cut. But in this variable, I express just the fact that the S in B, S minus B has to be 1. So very simple equation. On the other hand, as I said, the crossing symmetry is a way of connecting the amplitude with variable here of S to variable here, let me call S prime, which stays for the S but in the other channel, okay? So in terms of rapidity, this is just a reflection with respect to I pi half. So simply as it is, you have two beautiful equations which admit general solution. This general solution has a very simple function, as I will show you in a moment, which might have poles, simple, multiple, and so on. Let's concentrate on simple poles. So the poles are when, for particular value of the rapidity, your amplitude blows up. And the rapidity has to be on the imaginary axis, as we saw before. So around the pole, the S matrix factorizes in terms of the residue that you can interpret as three particles on shell coupling. And if you go to the exact, if you return to the S variable, this is just the signal of a pole, a specific value of the masses. So what's going on? Well, what's going on is very simple, that if you plug the value of the pole in the expression of S, you will get the mass of the bound state, and you see if you knew the mass of the initial particle and you knew the resonance angle, you are able to predict the bound state masses. So this is a remarkable formula, which has a very simple geometrical expression. You see, this formula is nothing else than the Carnot theorem for a triangle. So the mass in this theory form a triangle, A, B, and C, where the resonance angle is nothing else than the external angle of this triangle. But this immediately take over the theory, because once you discover that the mass and this relation, this tell you immediately that if you go to the channel A and C, you should find a pole corresponding to the mass B. As well as if you go to the channel B and C, you should find a pole which corresponds to the mass A, alias the external angle which are here are just the resonance angle of other amplitude, and altogether they have to fulfill the rule that the sum of external angles is pi. So very, very efficient information condensated in few formula which take up themselves. So the Bitzer principle say something. As I described up to now is general equations. However, to make dynamics, you have to do principle. And the principle is that, say, all particles are equal, but one is more equal than the others. Means that among all these particles should exist one that is lightest than all the other. And out of it, you will build all the dynamics. Translated in formula, this means that the S matrix should satisfy a nonlinear equations, which is expressed here. So suppose you want to know the S matrix of particle D with the bound state, which is this. To do that, you have just simply rigidly translate this line out of it using Young-Baxter. All the angles are fixed, so the real geometry is at work. So all the angles here are resonance angle. And once you do this translation on this line here, you end up in this equation. Okay? So all this is general, beautiful, a lot of model has been solved. Let me just give you a few examples how to make use of it. So the simplest S matrix you can think of, S equal minus 1. Because S equal 1 doesn't depend on rapidity, so crossing satisfies and so on. What is it? Well, this theory can be identified with the S matrix of Ising model away from critical temperature. Why so? Because you have to remember that the continuum limit of Ising, at least along the temperature axis, is just Majorana fermions. And Majorana fermions has the mass, the fermions has the mass which is simply a measurement of T away from Tc. So if you use the operator aid, really creation and annihilation operator of the Majorana field, which satisfies the equation of motion, well, their anti-commutation, so here comes the braiding, is exactly minus 1. I will come back to this, how to fully identify, this is a guess. So you see this, you think that this has to do with freezing in temperature, but you have to prove it more detail. I will come back later to it. Now, what about easing in a magnetic field now, which is much more interesting story. So this has been the breakthrough of Sasha Zamolodigo some years ago, because we noticed that this theory really defined the way I defined before as perturbation of conformal field theory. So it's a theory in the continuum. This has to be stressed, because people say, well, if I use the usual formulation of Ising on the lattice, I don't find any, say, Bethe Ansatz equation for it, and so on. Well, the if you go in the continuum, so discarding all irrelevant, what you end up is this kind of theory. These admit a set of conserved current which end up in charges. These charges commute, and the most interesting feature is the spectra of the spin of these charges. So R 1, 7, 11, 13, blah, 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 all odd number not divisible by 3 and 5. The spin is, you see, just this definition here. So if you have a T, energy tensor is spin 2. Because yeah, the difference between conformal and anti-conformal dimension. So these numbers, as a matter of fact, are also the Coxeter number of E8. We will see that E8 will pop up later on. In any case, you see, are all the number not divisible by 3 and 5, modulus 30.
Can you remind what theta was?
Theta here?
Yeah.
No, I mean, here, what I'm saying is that out of this theory, you can construct a lot of current. So for instance, the stress energy tensor is one, okay? Obviously, away from criticality, the dz bar of t is no longer zero, but will be expressed as dz of theta, which in this case is sigma. But suppose you take t square as an example. T square, at the conformal point, was again tz bar t square zero. But away from criticality will be something else. In some cases, it's not always true. You have to spot the right combination of the T, the descendants of T. It might exist a special combination of T, which can be expressed as a divergent or something else. Okay, and this happens if you go to certain value of the Verma modulus, and the values are 1, 7, 11, and so on. So if you go to the Verma modulus 5, say, you will not find any combination of descendant of the stress energy tensor at that level such that this equation is fulfilled. But if you go to the level 7, there are several quasi-primer operators. You have to probably choose the right combination. At that point, some of this combination can be written in this way. And then the remarkable thing is that you can proceed all along the tower of the Verma modulus and construct these charges in this way. Okay? So T here is a symbolic notation for, say, all of the quasi-primary descendants of the stress energy tensor family. So, with this conservation law, the story becomes absolutely nice because, first of all, the magnetic field has broken Z2 symmetry. So you might expect that the particle might form a bound state with itself. At least it's not forbidden by symmetry. On the other hand, you might, and if this is so, the triangular masses immediately spot the resonance angle to be 2 pi 3, because it will be equilateral angle. On the other hand, you might suspect that this particle might form another bound state. This bound state forms back the particle. Okay? If it's so, once again, you can spot the resonance angle. Now, the nice thing is that once you have made this hypothesis, compatibility of all the equations I said before require necessarily another pole. Why so? Because you have an equation like this, that was the bootstrap. So if this function should have a pole here, 2 pi over 5, you see immediately that this function should have also a pole, pi over 15. Otherwise, you are unable to move the shift of poles, making the story consistent. So altogether, with this very simple assumption, you have set up a theory where you have a fundamental particle which coupled to another one, to a third one, and you know exactly the mass ratio. The mass ratio are known and fixed. So for this matrix of fundamental particle, as you see, is very, very simple function. So this function is a pole 2 pi over 3 that you identify the particle A1, a pole 2 pi over 5 that you identify the particle 2, and a pole pi over 15 you identify particle 3. And all the rest are obtained by bootstrap. Now, once you continue, so you identify pole, you enter this new particle, you keep going, you keep going, you keep going. At the end of the day, all the spectra, all the bootstrap close with 8 particles, whose mass ratio is here. The first one is just a measurement of the magnetic field with a constant that can be computed exactly, I'm not going to discuss here. What is also nice is that all these particles are nothing else than the Rom Frobenius eigenvector of the incidence matrix of V8. So this means that if you take the incidence matrix of V8, you diagonalize among the vector that is the Rom Frobenius eigenvector with all positive components, the positive components are just this, and in particular this allows to put in correspondence the mass with the dot of this graph. And then there are some nice remarks, I will not enter much in it. For instance, the particle, the lightest particle correspond to the node less visit. The second less visit node is this one, which corresponds to 2. Obviously, the highest one is the one which is in the center, which is the highest coordination number. Now, this is very nice, mathematically speaking, because then you can use all the technology of Lie algebra. For instance, the fact that the mass are associated to the dots means are associated to representation of V8. A representation of V8 can tell you how 2 representations split in terms of the others. So out of that, okay, this will be unstable, I will discuss later on. Out of that, you can build up all the structure of bound states. So, as I said, in the scattering A1, A1, you find 3 particles that you can really interpret as decomposition of V8 representation. If you keep going, you find in the scattering 1 and 2 additional particles, and so on and so forth, and then at the end you complete all the table. Here are just simple pole. This function has highly non-trivial poles, so even pole of order 12, which has to be properly interpreted as a multiscattering, but I'm not entering here. So, all of this to say now is in field theory. I would like to address the universality class of the Easing model where I have both fields present. Okay? So, what should I expect? What we know about that? So, I would like to somehow stroll in the plane of H and T, T minus TC, so this is the conformal point. I would like to stroll in the plane along a path which starts from low temperature phases, going up, and then a right to high temperature phases. So the free energy or the effective action, as you like to call it, I don't know, has a shape which obviously depends on the position. What we know about this theory? Well, as I discussed so far, at least we know 2 things. One is along this axis. How is the theory along this axis? And these are just massive 3 Majorana fermions, which might be kink or particles. And the other one point that we know is here. It's just the solution I described you before. So you see, it's something striking, because you have a theory which here has excitation in terms of kinks, 3 kinks. Here is excitation in terms of 8 particles, quite messy, quite rich story. And finally, it ends up again to a free theory. So the question I would like to ask is how the spectrum evolve along this path? Can we make more measurement of it? Can we compute universal ratio? Can mu? So, just to say one thing, a question you might ask is, what is the value of the magnetic field where the second particle enter into the game? You know, this is important because particle give contribution to, say, specific heat or to other kind of point, so you might expect consequences for the thermodynamics. In all the generic point here, the theory will be non-integrable. So then it starts the complicated part of the story. And one way to see it is, for instance, if you study transfer matrix on a finite volume. So suppose you diagonalize the transfer matrix of Ising on a finite volume of values r, and you study the eigen function as a function of R. So the eigenvalues, excuse me. So in integrable case, usually, as I will show you in a minute, you spot crossing of line. This is the, I don't know, von Neumann theorem or whatever how it's called. So an Hamiltonian system, which is an integrable feature, typically split in blocks of several Hilbert space, and the line typically crosses. Whereas in non-integrable cases where you are unable to split the Hilbert space in blocks, the line typically repel. Okay? So see this example. I computed the transformatic for easing. I'm not telling you how I did it, but in a generic point of the plane, and this is what I got. So these are the energy eigenvalues. So the eigenvalue of the transformatrix, here is the radius of the cylinder. So you see there is a ground state line, and then there is some crazy line here that you can spot as an interpolation, which stay for the decay of false vacuum, but okay. But what I want to point out is, look this repulsion here, okay? There are many of them. However, if I go exactly along the magnetic axis, I move my simulation, you see there is a lot of crossing here, and also with this simulation, by the way, just a side remark, if you just compute the lowest eigenvalues in the infrared, you see immediately the mass gap of the theory, which nicely fit with the scattering theory I described before. So, to make any progress in the non-integrable case, I have to introduce another ingredient in the story, which is the form factor. So form factor are nothing else than matrix element of any operator, magnetic operator, energy operator, and so on the set of the asymptotic particle. So in integrable theories, these objects are computable. This is the message. How they are computable? Before telling you, let me say what is the use of it. So the use of it is very, very important, because suppose I have to compute one correlator, say two-point function. So what I will do, I will insert here at this point a complete set of states, which are my particles. So the Hilbert space are my particle. At this point, I will use all the translation invariants of my theory to translate the point R to the point zero with the energy. But the energy, the n are eigenvector of the energy, so give me the eigenvalues, which are here, and all what is left is the matrix element. So, to say that the form factor enter into the spectral representation of the correlation function, and say, suppose you have a one particle term, you will just have integral representation of Bessel with three factor, which are the matrix element, and higher order are integral of it, much more complicated object, but this is absolutely what it stays for. Why is important? Okay, this another way of seeing is that in this representation, the correlation function looks like a sum on intermediate states, so each time you cut here, you find n particle contribution. Why is important this? First of all, this representation uses at all stage physical quantity. Physical quantity means that the matrix element and all quantity are finite. So this is very remarkable situation, say, in field theory, because usually you have to renormalize, go to renormalized quantity, blah, 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 blah. Here, everything is finite from the very beginning. But there is even another message, which is important from a practical point of view. The message is that that expression I showed you before, which is obviously an expression in which the parameter is exponential minus Rm. So as far as R is very, very large, the quantity are small, so this is the expansion parameters, but the message is that this expression as it is present a very, very fast rate of convergence for many operators, in particular the relevant two. Okay, I will comment. Thanks for a nasty question. I will give a nasty answer. So for massive case, let me specify, this presents a very fast rate of convergence on all this unskilled. Now, Ilya raised a very, very important point. The important point is, suppose I have the theory, my field theory is defined as interpolation between two critical points. Along the flow, there will be massless excitation. Massless excitation obviously has not a gap, has not mass gap. So if you have massless excitation, you can have 1, 2, 3, 4, 100 particles all sit at the same threshold. So at that point, you do not have a natural parameters how to organize your sum of states because everything seems to collapse at threshold. Now this is true, is a problem. However, depends on the operator, how serious is the problem. And this is still a problem under investigation. Means that certain operators, you can use it and are perfectly nice and the series convergent perfect, you can check whatever you want, sounds. Well, are they coupled to certain states? No, no, if they don't couple to anything, they are just...
They don't couple to the masses.
No, no, they do. No, they do. But the point is, the way how we are organized, the things work perfectly. Other operators are not so nice. To be concrete, in pre-critical easing model flow to easing, the energy operator is perfectly fine. You can check C theorem, anomalous dimension, everything. The magnetic operator is, on the other hand, is a nasty operator. You can do something about that, but it's not true what is written here. Because in that case, it's even divergent, the series, so there are some care to be done. But say, in the massive case, this is perfectly fine, at least for strongly relevant operator. And this is very, very good, because means, you see, means that you have to compute this object, which is a nasty object. In principle, you have to compute this quantity, which is quite complicated job. Out of it, you have to sum and to make integrals. So it seems a pretty, how to say, unrealistic job. So you might wonder if this expression is not just a symbolic expression. Not at all. What I said before implied that if you compute just the first of them, you can automatically spot all feature of correlation function with very, very high precision. I think I will have five more minutes. We start a little... I don't want to negotiate. I mean, we just started... Okay, well, this object can be computed simply in terms of the S matrix, you see, because they satisfy property like this. So, okay, I will not have time, sorry. Then I have to flash. There is all technology how to compute this quantity. So let me just go to the thermal easing model. So for the thermal easing model, say the energy operator are very simple expression. If you insert into the correlation function, you get just a nice Bessel function. You can immediately spot C theorem, ultraviolet behavior, and so on. If you do the spin sector, on the other end, you find a chain of function, which on top of that has a pole and IPI, we'll see is relevant. And if you insert this matrix element into the spectral representation, you arrive directly to Pan-Levy equation, really simply as it is. Now the same holds also for easing the magnetic field, much more complicated job, but you see, with just 8 of this matrix element, you have incredible precision data on the correlation function. So to explain this graph, this curve are the theoretical one and the spot are Monte Carlo simulation, and there is no free parameters in the game. Nothing is, you cannot move anything. So this is really, well, I mean, I found quite remarkable, very few analytic tools you can spot.
Quick remark.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, in certain case, I mean, depending on which deformation you are. You mean you are referring to Palme Vert? Yeah.
Some of them respond
to one particular function, some of them are crazy, and things that might be crazy. Well, I mean, you know, Palme equation, to fix the right solution, you have to spot the boundary condition. You spot the boundary condition with the ultraviolet property. I completely share with you. I mean, look, the story is complicated. I'm not overselling. I'm just saying that in some case you can do something. And it's remarkable that with a little analytic work, you can get something which comes from numerical simulation where you cannot touch anything. But in the most generic case, the life is complicated. I mean, it's not... Okay, so in the non-integrable case, as you can understand, excuse me, so you can do everything in terms of perturbation theory on this object which I defined before. So you can spot all quantity you like in terms of this perturbation theory and so on. So okay, time is running by, so I will not tell you anything about this, sorry for that. Sorry for that, you will have to ask me privately. I would like to go to the point. The point is that after you make a lot of job, you discuss all the dynamics in full detail, you can compute everything and so on and so forth, even decay with blah, blah, blah. At the end, I would like to write to this. So at the end of the day, you arrive here to set of numbers. So for the class of universality of the easy model, you can spot all the universal ratio you like. These are numbers, these are exact numbers. When I say this means that I didn't dare to write in terms of the mass of the particle, blah, 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 but these are exact numbers which stay as it is. You can repeat the story, so the definition was as before, you can repeat the story for many other class of universality, tricritical easing, for instance, where you spot different perturbation depending on the theory move and so on and so forth. So for a tricritical easing you have a full list of numbers, you have really complete knowledge of many, many things. And to come back to my original problem, self-avoiding walk, which might be an interesting number to talk about, some years ago with John Card we computed this number, which is 13.75, which is different from the random walk. So for random walk this ratio is 12, for self-avoiding is 13.75. So this at least provide a 10% off or different to spot it. So conclusion, there is a rich dynamics away from criticality, only a little I've been trying to discuss. There are indeed confinement phenomena, decay of false vacuum, a lot of other stuff like this. There has been calculation of several universal ratio universality classes I described, this give a fingerprint of. This provides a tool to discuss analytic property of free energy, something like Langer singularity, spinoidal singularity, and so on and so forth. And the question which, well, I mean, at least I would like to know if it's well posed or not, or it can be an answer, is can SLAE, which as we know described nicely Carve and so on, extend it off to off-critical dynamics and predict at least some of this universal ratio. So I don't ask tricriticalism, it'd be too far. So, but self-avoiding walk is very specific question. I mean, you have this walk, you would like to compute this one. Okay, I did in time. Thank you.
And you can map self-avoiding walk to phase transition.
To ON.
So this ratio corresponds?
Yeah, no, indeed. This is the way we computed with John years ago. So what we did was the following. You map the self-avoiding walk to ON little n. Yeah. then you spot the singularity x minus x critical. So this is a fixed fugacity. Once you have this singularity, you make a Laplace transform to large n, and you spot this dependence on large n, and then this ratio I was talking about is simply a ratio of two specific correlation functions, the O little n spin model. So the way to compute this ratio C over D, you make an integral of R square on the spin-spin correlation function of integral R square epsilon-epsilon energy that you compute in the ON model, and then you Fourier Laplace transform to large N. This is the way we did it. This apply everything the technology I discuss here, massive particle, because the spin model has S matrix exact with N particle, and so, form factor, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if this can be directly computed from a theory which start really describing the object in itself. I don't know, I mean, you are the expert in a way. I mean, I would be curious, I mean, to see how this can be done. Or easing, all the table I gave you before, as we know, easing can be formulated in terms of path. So, are SLE able to at least give some numbers?
Near critical, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So not exactly sitting at the critical point.
Sure.
In a tiny region around it.
Yeah. But the second thing I want to ask you, can you just summarize what the relationship between
Eisen
and the DAP operator?
What's
the bottom line?
Yeah, it's remarkable. Well, easing at the criticality can be constructed in different way, in terms of cosette of conformal field theory. Now, amazingly enough, there is one cosette which is E8 level 1, cross E8 level 1, divide E8 level 2. So this hold at criticality. So at criticality, you have to think easing either as SU2 or E8. Now, if you use energy, you are exciting the degrees of freedom of SU2. If you use the magnetic field, somehow you make awake the degrees of freedom of E8. So this is the nice picture. Yeah.
But remarkably, there's no other like E6, E7, although they're
Well, I mean, E7 come from the tricriticalism model. The non-simple lace, you mean? Well, non-simple lace is a more delicate question. I imply parafermions and so on. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I forgot to mention that among the people in the pantheon of S matrix, of course, there is Pasha. I mean, you can make sense in terms of parafermions. I mean, the story is much more complicated. The non-simple lace, people have looked at that. There are even proposals of S-matrix. But it's not so naive as you would have done for the non-simple lace. There are degrees of freedom which has to take care of the different length of the roots, and these are typically associated to parafermions. I mean, these are the typical setting. But, I mean, this has become really a rather technical discussion, I would say. So. Sorry for that.